Welcome to another episode of G220 Radio. This is Ricky Gantz with Mike Miller, and this is episode number 446. Mike, what's going on, brother?
Not much. Working, studying, prepping, going to church. The usual.
Yeah. For me, as we was talking about just before the show, this is my second full day back to work since my surgery and then the recovery period. And man, I'm telling you, I'm not going to say what my job is, but for those who know, that's a tough job. I didn't realize how tough it is until my body wasn't used to doing it for 2 months.
Yeah. Gotta get back in shape.
Oh yeah.
To start walking on the weekends.
Yeah. The one thing I think that's made it even, or also added to it being difficult, is the weather. It's been hot. So, you know, it's been in the 80s, which really some people might look at that and say, that's not hot, depending on where you are. But it's been some pretty hot humid days. So it's been extra difficult with that too. So
yeah,
when that sun is just beating down on you, it really drains you.
Yeah. I know that experience, being out in the desert. It's no fun.
Military time?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So what we're going to talk about here tonight is an interesting conversation topic. Really seeing where this one's going to take us, because it's kind of just a last minute show topic. But on Facebook, I had posted on there, let me see if I can pull it up, some questions about church. How far is too far really to go or to travel? And from that post that I posted on Facebook came this topic: how far is too far to travel to church? I think some of the questions, I'm having some issues, it's not pulling up, but I think some of the questions that I asked was, you know, like, how far would you travel to go to church? Would you move to a new state if there was not a good church in your area? Would you move to another city if there was no church in your area? Something along those lines. Or would you try to plant a church if you're not qualified to pastor or lead in that way? Would you try to find people who are like-minded that have those qualifications and other churches that may seek to plant it and be a part of that? And those were kind of some of the questions that led to this topic for tonight. How far is too far to travel for church?
Yeah, and I think it's an important topic, at least one that hasn't, I think, is more discussed nowadays, but maybe not as prevalent throughout all of church history. Just with the ability with cars and public transportation in larger cities here in the United States, where we're just more mobile and be able to go to places faster with it. They talk about when I was at Liberty, Thomas Jefferson had a vacation house in Force, which is right next to Lynchburg, kind of right joining cities. And it's like a 2-day trip, but it'd take me a couple hours to get there in a car. And so to just the ability to travel, I think, makes this question unique to our area. Though I don't think it's unsolvable. I think there is things one must consider before you do such things, but it is definitely a more modern issue, maybe even a first world issue to some extent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a lot easier to get around traveling by automobile, train, you know, bus, whatever it may be. You can get places a lot faster than you used to, and fly places and whatnot. But when you're wanting to become a member of a local church or belong to a local church, there's some things, obviously, we've talked about on this program that you want to look for in these churches that you're trying to find. Theology is important. You want to be in a church that's theologically sound. You don't want to be somewhere that's preaching heresy. You don't want to belong to a church and find out they're speaking and teaching open theism, which is something we talked about last week from their pulpit. You don't want to be in a church that's preaching and teaching modalism, something, another thing that has been talked about on this program as well. So there's definitely things that you don't want to find yourself in a church that is preaching and teaching these things. Now, being Reformed, being Calvinistic in our understanding of God's word, for some people, that may be one of those lines that they draw and say, I can't be in a non-Calvinistic church. And so that may be an issue for you. Or in my example, I've been in church in a churches before that were not Calvinistic, and it wasn't an issue for a while, but it eventually became an issue. And so those are things you got to consider before making these decisions. But one thing we do know for sure is that Christians need to belong and be a part of a local church. So now it comes to how far is too far to belong to a church. If you're looking for a church and you know that as Christians, we need to be a part of a local church, what do you do when there's no local churches in your area that are solid? If you all you can find is a few churches that, you know, maybe they're a Wesleyan, you know, Methodist church that's kind of already gone off the deep end, or some Unitarian church that's accepting everybody in and not really even teaching biblical truths, you know, or there maybe there's even a Presbyterian church in your area that's PCUSA that's kind of gone off the deep end as well. So what then do you do? How far would you be willing to travel? That's kind of what we want to try to talk about tonight and kind of discuss and see, you know, what are some of the, how can we flesh that out?
Yeah, I think it's important, as you mentioned, there's really two questions in play. While the main focus is how far, the other question is how much can I accept going to a church that is theologically different than what I hold to and be a member of good standing in, however that may be defined. But obviously one where you're not there to charge, try to change it. I think that's not a member of good standing. But just that way. And I think that depends. Well, some people might be willing to drive farther out to go to church because they're not willing to maybe sit under in a church that is predominantly Arminian and they hold to more Calvinistic view of salvation. Or they won't go to a Presbyterian church because they're Baptist and they don't want to sit under a paedo-Baptist preacher. And so I think they're, so those questions are connected. And there's going to have to be some give or take. If you're really, you know, it must be exactly or mostly exactly to what I believe, you're going to maybe have to be willing to go farther. Mm-hmm. But then the question is that good? Is that what would be spiritually beneficial? And are you going to be able to be a faithful member? And I think that's kind of the criteria I came down is as far as I can go. It's not a distance, but a criteria. Can I be a faithful member? Can I obey the commands of Scripture to be part of this church? Am I able to be hospitable, to make sure my fellow believers are without needs? If someone goes to the hospital and their family needs food, am I able to help them? Or is my distance too far away that it makes it not, I'm not able to help, or maybe not able to help as much? Now, there's different reasons why people may not help. That I even live closer, that's not a question. And I understand that. This isn't just like a blanket. But for our topic, I think those are the types of things that need to be considered. I've pledged myself to this church. How can I faithfully serve this church? And how can this church faithfully serve me in the same way? It's the two-way street. I think that has to be the defining question in deciding this.
Yeah.
And that goes with, well, can I faithfully be a faithful member at this Presbyterian church, though I am Reformed Baptist or something like that? No, I do think there's limits. Like, this isn't say go to the liberal PC USA church, you know, if you're a conservative Reformed Baptist. Mm-hmm. Like, there's obviously, you want to find a church that displays what a true church is. But at the same time, I think that where that question of, can I go to an Arminian Baptist church? And, or even like maybe for myself, would I be willing to faithfully serve my fellow members in an independent, fundamental, King James, dispensational, post-rapture church? I think, and that's where the rubber meets the road, and when you start making these decisions.
Yeah. And there's a lot there that you said that, you know, from my own experience, I was in an independent fundamentalist Baptist church. They were not, I would not say they were KJV only to that extent. They definitely preferred the KJV Bible. I got an NIV Bible from a bookstore. I didn't even know it was an NIV. It was a Bible and I grabbed one. I liked the cover on it. It had blue and tan. It was a real nice looking Bible. And I took it in there. They're like, oh, if you need a Bible, go the New King James, but not, let's not go outside of that. You know what I mean? But so they were definitely a King James preferred church, independent, fundamentalist, dispensational, pre-trib rapture kind of church. And I loved the people there. I actually was having a conversation with my wife and said, sometimes I wish I can go back to those simpler times where I didn't have some of the knowledge I have theologically, where you're just serving and loving people and just trying to learn from God's word. But as I began to grow in my understanding of theology, I came to a place where I felt I was not going to be able to sit under their teaching and bring my children up under that teaching without having to go home and correct whatever the Sunday school lesson was to my children. And rather than be disruptive and be somebody that's constantly, as you mentioned earlier, trying to change their doctrine and change what they're teaching, I felt it was best for me to move and find a church that was more theologically in line with where I was at. And so those are things that you do have to weigh those things. Cause after I then coming into Calvinism, you know, people talk about the cage stage, you know, that people come into certain types of theological truths. But at that point, I don't think I would have been able to, as I continue to grow in that theology, to sit comfortably and calmly without maybe questioning or bringing up things that I disagree with. So it needed time to grow. But I got to a point where I ended up coming back into a more Southern Baptist church that was not Calvinistic. And things were fine. We got along well and everything. And then I was even able to teach in Sunday school. But again, those types of beliefs started to come into play from some of the leaders coming down were kind of, because I'm Calvinistic, kind of wanted to push that aside and then telling people, and I wasn't trying to push those things on people, but it's just my theology. And so if you look at my Facebook, you see, you know, what I'm preaching on the streets, those things are going to come out at times. And so then they're saying, well, this is, you know, not a good theological position. And so we got to a point again where we felt like, okay, well, we were coexisting, but now we need to move on. So those things happen, but you have to be willing to, as a individual, to come into this with the understanding that there would be a lot of grace that needs to be applied. Can you coexist with believers that don't agree with you on, you know, some of the theological stances that you have? Absolutely. We can do that. It's harder to do that though when you're in a church together with each other. And so can you do that with grace, with compassion, with kindness, with respect, not trying to disrupt their, you know, their theological beliefs from as that church, you know, is maybe even in their doctrinal statements for what they believe. If you can do those things, then you could probably coexist with that. But if you can't, then it may be a thing where you then have to look for another church, right? And that's part of what we're talking about, because this was your first point. Can you accept being a member in good standing in that church if there's some theological differences? I probably would have a hard time going into a Presbyterian church, being Baptist, but if it was the only church available to my family, and I know the teaching was solid other than, you know, baptism, you know, their understanding of the covenant, when it comes to baptizing babies, could I make that exist? You know?
Yeah. And I think that's where it is. So when I went to Liberty, and no, we're not going to talk about what's happening at Liberty. There were a lot of churches and they exemplified what was being taught from Liberty. A lot of the Baptist churches were. There wasn't like a Reformed church. I went to what would probably be the closest to a Reformed church called Grace Assembly, great body of believers that were there. But there was a PCUSA church there, and I visited. Very nice gospel preaching church. And so you have that dilemma. Do I go to a Baptist church that is more like your standard stereotypical Southern Baptist, I guess it's not your stereotypical large Southern Baptist church? Mm-hmm. Or do I go to this kind of non-denominational, which kind of leans Calvinistic, or do I go to this Presbyterian church? And those latter two options go, or do I find another church? You know, so there you have that opportunity. But if you lost two of those last two, and they're all kind of these Southerns, could I do it? And yeah, I think that's the question. And then when you start considering, well, should I start moving? I mean, now you're bringing in a whole host of different other questions, like, is it worth the time and the money to find a new house and to pack everything and to move? I do think if you're moving, if you're set on moving for whatever reason, knowing where you're going to church and taking that into effect should very much be part of the how you do it, that you should consider it. And I think a lot of times people don't. They're like, well, we're going to move to this town. We're going to find a house and then we're going to find a church.
Right.
Instead of considering kind of well, maybe I should try to find some churches and maybe find a house that would allow me to be closer. And I think that's the thing. You want to be closer because there's a sense in which that's a community in which you're trying to impact the immediate community of a church. And there could be problems if a lot of your people do not live in that community.
Yeah.
And this comes to effect when my wife and I moved to the house we're currently in. When we made the decision, it was kind of perfectly situated. My wife was working in downtown Louisville. I was working kind of towards the southwest. Our church is even farther south and west from that. And then the seminary is farther east from where my wife worked. At the time it worked, everything was around 30 minutes, 15 to 30 minutes from each other from the house. And that was intentional because my wife went to work 5 days a week downtown. I went to work 5 days a week, but we still wanted to be close to the church. Mm-hmm. And that kind of worked out. And then I was also going to seminary. So I needed to be close to the seminary for whatever reasons that may be to go onto campus. And so there was intentionality. And I think that's another part. So if you're going to consider moving, well, is it worth it? Now, and part of it is, a lot of this also concludes how you view the church. Obviously, we're taking a high view of church
right. In
this podcast. And so these are the things one has to kind of really consider. Would I move to get closer to church? No, but if there's an opportunity that would be beneficial to also move besides just going to church with it. But I think there's also the intentionality. No matter how far you are you going to be intentional enough to be in the church? Because when we moved, our previous house was 5 minutes like going to the church was nothing. And it was nice with that. But all it really made us move away is that we were more intentional about going to church, about just not, I didn't have opportunities just to go, hey, I'm going to go to church and work on this thing and come home. We made it in conjunctions with the other things we were doing in that area, but we also continued the fellowship with our people. And those are the types of things we must consider when you're doing it. You know, when we were talking about being a faithful member.
Yeah. One of the things, as you were mentioning that too, that came to my mind is, as you said, there are benefits to being belonging to a church that's in your community or that's close. Because you can, if you're out witnessing to people, if you're running into people, sharing the gospel, and they're looking for a church, you know, as you're sharing the gospel with people, or you're just starting to disciple some people to get in, that are getting into the faith, somebody that's gotten saved, a family member, friend, coworker, you have a church to point them to bring them into, so that they can be under the ordinances as well, be under the means of grace. That can be a benefit. But again, there's so many variables that you got to think about when you are trying to decide this. I know I've heard some people say that, you know, speaking of moving, that if there's no good church in your area, then your first and most important thing should be your spiritual needs and the needs of your family. So you should pick up and move. And if that means moving to another state that has better churches, then do so. And as you were saying, Mike, I don't think that's always going to be the case with everyone, because so many things come into factor. Financial, you know, are they able? Now, God, a lot of people will say, well, God will provide for you a job in that area.
But don't test God.
Yeah.
Either.
Yeah. But these are the things that you hear people will make these kind of, you know, statements. So a lot of things can come into play in why you would move or drive to a different church or go to church, even depending on how far that will be. But I think looking at, can you be a faithful member of the church? There was something you brought up earlier about, you know, being able to like be hospitable and bring meals to people that may be in need. And even with that today, I think that can be, that's possible, even if you're not that close. You know, just for example, I won't shout out any names to embarrass anybody, but I thank this lady dearly. She's a dear sister in the Lord that lives in Georgia. And just last week, I mean, she knew that my wife had been struggling with taking care of me during the recovery time. She asked her out of the blue, like, what do you like to eat? You know, and what does Ricky like to eat? And what about the kids? And she paid for and sent us food from a restaurant up here all the way from Georgia, you know? So I say that and say thank you to this lady, a blessing that she's been. But I say that because in this time where we're talking about we have automobiles and vehicles that can travel, there are ways you can be hospitable to your brethren, even from a distance, depending on whether it's a half hour, 30, 40 minutes, you know, an hour. But there is some things that you do, as you brought up, that come to mind that can be hindered if you have, let's say you have a good solid church here and you've got people that are to the west an hour away and people to the east an hour away, and they're both driving an hour to get here. Those people are now 2 hours away from each other. It's going to be pretty difficult for them to fellowship on a
outside of Sunday.
Yeah, outside of Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, so you have that, the fellowship aspect. Like even now in my current situation, there are members from my house that are an hour away, driving-wise. And it's hard to say, hey, let's get together and meet, because one of us is going to have to be driving 2 hours. Either way, unless we decide to kind of meet in the middle. But everyone, it's still 2 hours, just split up in that way. I think evangelism also takes a hit when you're not close. As you mentioned, like just meeting people in the store, just getting people out. It's hard to, and I tried, and we, and do it where I'm, you know, driving 30 minutes to go do some door-to-door witnessing, and then I do 30 minutes back. And there's times after a long day, I'm just sitting there like, man, I really just don't want to drive 30 minutes. If I was 5 minutes away, it would have been different. I just go over, you know, I don't have to think about it and my tiredness for 30 minutes. Though I use that time to pray, so I would not be that way. But I think you have those aspects. be realistic about it. And but yeah, there is and those are things. And when you consider the commands to love one another that way, you know, and with the advent of DoorDash and Uber Eats and whatnot, obviously that changes. But I mean, in a big city, that's not as, you know, you have it. But what about that small Midwestern town in the middle of nowhere, and where you don't have that ability to do that? And mm-hmm. So obviously there are, the principles remain the same. And while we thank God for the technology and be able to do that, especially in a pandemic, when people are kind of being cautious about baking food and giving it to people, but yet you still have people who need it. You know, those become good tools. But one thing to think about, even with that, is does that become then kind of impersonal?
Yeah.
Though there are benefits about finding, you know, what they like. But again, still things, considering not everyone's going to have that option to DoorDash, especially when you live in like Broken Bow, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of factors, a lot of variables that come into play when you're trying to think these things through. And I think they're important. I think those two points are very important. Can you accept being in a church as a member of a good standing in that church over some theological differences? And then how can you be a faithful member? And if you can manage things, you know, for some people, it may work well, and for some others, it may not. So this is no blanket statement that this is how it should be, or this is how far you should go, or this is how far you shouldn't go. But I think some other things come into factor or into play that come into my mind is, for example, we have a blended family. So my wife has kids from a previous relationship, where I have, you know, kids from a previous relationship. And so every other weekend, the kids got to go to their parent, their dad's house, right? So if that's the case, then we have to drive about an hour to the west of us to do that. If we happen to find a church that was an hour to the east or an hour to the south on a Sunday to go pick them up, now you have that long drive home, and then you have that long drive after, you probably right after you get home, maybe an hour of relaxation before you can, you know, take off to go and then pick up the kids. So there's a lot of variables, a lot of things that come into play that you're trying to think, because then the Lord's Day, which is a day of rest, it's a day of meditating upon the Lord, is a day that's in travel. I'm not saying you can't make that enjoyable, you know, but that, as you was mentioning, could become tiresome to someone. If you're driving an hour to church and then an hour back to church, or 2 hours to church and 2 hours back, which would be really strong or really hard to do, I should say. You know, financially, it would probably be hard on people. Driving, the wariness that it would cause. And then turning and going, you know, in the other direction to do that, if you have a situation like that, that might be difficult for you. And Sundays would not become a day of rest. It would be kind of come like a day of like, oh, we love the Lord, we want to serve the Lord. But it may become a worn out day for you.
Yeah. It becomes busy. I got to do this. And it doesn't provide the rest, the need to stop and to think. And also hurts your mentality in worship. So then you have that aspect too. driving distances, and things happen. Kids get you angry. Even short distances to church, let alone longer distances. And those are other things to consider. Like, are you going to be able to keep your kid calm as best you can keep a kid calm in church after doing an hour when they've just kind of been sitting down and doing nothing for the past hour? Especially kids that are crazy like mine. And again, is that beneficial spiritually for your family to be able to make those long journeys? Now, you can do things to help out. Like, we're reading through the Chronicles of Narnia series. We've just finished book 3. We're now in Prince Caspian.
Are you reading through them, or are you talking about like audio?
Reading. Like, my wife is reading through them. Mm-hmm. And the kids enjoy it. And it's been great. I realize not everyone can do that, especially if you're like a single mom or just a single parent in general. You can't read and drive at the same time. Maybe audiobooks or something like that. But nonetheless, is that beneficial for your family? And that's part of it. So even as to consider it, is if you have a family, does driving that far become spiritually beneficial for the family in this day of rest that God has called us to observe and to meet together and to worship and to enjoy each other's presence? So just to think through that and to do it, where for us 30 minutes allows kind of the peaceful time with the reading for us to think about themes that are coming from the book. How are they playing out? And just a good adventure and enjoying with that, something the kids enjoy. And really kind of helping us to think and be ready for what we're doing, especially, you know, in a time where we have limited contact with other people, and kind of church is our time to interact with everyone else and fellow human beings.
Yeah. Yeah. I asked that about Narnia because my wife has the audiobooks. And so when she's going on drives with the kids, either running errands or, you know, taking a little drive out to get something at a thrift store or wherever she's going, you know, during the day, she puts it on, and the kids actually enjoy going through those. I saw the movie. Somebody told me the movies are not as good as the books. I don't know, but I haven't read the books myself, but
movies never are. But that's the creative license in which movies have to do to make it interesting.
Yeah.
So
I think also, you know, an aspect of thinking this through and trying to figure out how far is too far to travel to church, even if you're going a distance, I think it can depend on the doctrine of the church, what the church is teaching theologically. Can you be a faithful person there? And then how is the fellowship with the people there? Because if you have great love and joy being around these people, then the distance kind of doesn't seem, it's not as big of an issue for you. Because I know personally that, you know, when my wife used to go to that independent fundamentalist church that she used to go to, that was not a good biblical church, you could live closer to the church, but you didn't have that kind of feeling like when you went there, you was just loved being there with all the people and whatnot. So you could have a church that's close to you and not have that feeling, and have a church further away and have that feeling, or vice versa. So I think those are things that need to be considered. Okay, if I'm making this distance, how can we, you know, how does this, as you said, spiritually benefit our family or not benefit our family? And if you have a church that's just loving you and encouraging you and being a part of your life and part of your family, even though there's a distance, you know, it may be worth it spiritually for your family. You know?
Yeah. And that's a good point, you know, to make, that there is also, you know, the church family, to consider with that.
My throat was getting scratchy. Sorry. But one of the things too, to consider with that, what if you are the church that has someone that's coming from a good distance away, maybe say an hour, hour and 15 minutes or so in travel. What are some things that the church members could do for that family, knowing that they're traveling a good distance? Like say, if you had an evening service, if the church had a morning service and an evening service, that would be a lot for that family to drive an hour out, drive an hour back, spend about an hour or so at home, load up the kids again, and drive another hour back and then another hour back home. That would be 4 hours on the road that day. But if some of the family members of that church could say, hey, we know you're taking this drive. And this, again, not something that one family would do every week, you know, because it just might not be possible for them to do it, but they could host, you know, different couples in the church, other families in the church could host those people over for that afternoon, come over for dinner, you know, stay, hang out with us. And then you can come back to church in the evening, you know, so you don't have to make that double trip. Or as like you said, you get together with people and find ways to encourage them in knowing that they are traveling so far, and have them stay, like planning basically that when they're coming down, we're going to have different people in the church, like bring them in, you know, so that they don't have to make that trip and they can come back to the evening service and benefit from more fellowship with the other brothers and sisters.
Yeah, that's good. There's people in my church that they do that. They had a set group of people because they had to drive a little bit farther. And even allowed their kids to use their kids' beds for naps, you know, if they needed it, mm-hmm. with the younger kids, and be able to have kind of that fellowship between the two services. So then it's only one trip. You get that fellowship, you know, and be able to do it. So yeah, definitely something doable, and showing hospitality. And even, you know, if they help, you know, provide, you know, bags of chips and drinks, you know, stuff they can readily bring. Mm-hmm. That would also, I do think another thing, kind of thinking about it, and this would pertain more to people who live north, and increasingly as you go farther north, is weather. Mm-hmm. How much does weather affect your drive? If you are in a place that snows a lot, and usually those places keep their streets fairly clean, but there's risks.
Yeah.
Risks with ice, black ice, slow travel times makes it longer. Do you really want to go to a church that's an hour away in the summertime when it can possibly be an hour and a half, two, even 3 hours? And at that point, you're almost like Nick being neglected half the year, 3/4 of the year, depending how far north you go and how long those winters last. And so I think that's another aspect to consider, is reasonableness within the weather conditions. Now in Florida, obviously it's not going to be as of a big of a deal, because the most you're going to deal with is rain. And if you have a hurricane coming through, no one's going to church anyways, for the most part. Unless it's like a category two, then, you know, there is that where it's not as important to deal with.
Yeah.
On that aspect. So you do have to consider weather when you're looking at this, because you don't want to unnecessarily put your family in harm by driving. And if it's going to take you 2 hours to go to church when it normally takes you an hour, I would be more hesitant to actually do it, because like, well, what if it takes longer? Now you're missing church, and now you have to turn around and do the whole thing again. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, obviously you have that to contend with too.
Yeah. And what we're really trying to do here is just ask the question and discuss this and try to come up, throw out some variables there and some things to kind of think through. Because as you're talking about that, and you mentioned Florida, I started thinking about the snow bunnies. I know that, you know, when I'm out at work, I have people that will be here in the summer, but then when winter comes, they have a house down in Florida and they go down there for the winter time. Huh. So again, you know, in that situation, if they're Christians, I don't know if these people necessarily are, but if there's Christians that do that, maybe the weather's too bad for them where they live when it gets to snow time for them physically, they need to be in, you know, out of there. And so they go down to Florida, have a house down there. Most likely if they're Christians, they're attending a church down there. I know another instance where there was a individual who went to a good Reformed 1689 Baptist church, excuse me. And when they had one of their children, they were born with some health issues. So I think like the first year or so of his life, they weren't able to travel. And they lived about 45 minutes to an hour or so away from the church. And it was difficult for them to travel. They needed to be close to where they were for the health of their son. And the pastor said, hey, I know somebody that's closer to you. It's not as theologically reformed as we are, but I think it's better for your family to go there for the time being. And to get that fellowship, to get that, you know, time in on the Lord's Day with your family, than to try to make that trip here when your child has these needs right now. So think, and I bring those up because it's working with people to try to say, hey, okay, I know you travel a good distance and maybe there's a time in your life or a period in your life where you're unable to do that. How can we work with you to kind of see you through that time? There's so many variables. There's so many things. I don't know if we can say it's cut and dry. Like this is exactly how far you could travel or you shouldn't travel because there's a lot of factors that can come into play.
Yeah. And I think that's important to side. Like we shouldn't judge Christians who would make a different decision about where they go to church necessarily because of how far they drive, whether they should attend a church closer or not. Obviously the benefits of attending a church closer to where you live do outweigh the benefits of churches that tend to be farther away. And so I think there should be an effort to be close to a church you attend. But kind of in the mentioning and how, and the biggest question is, given kind of all of these factors and others that we may have missed, which is best? What is the wise decision? And this takes a moment of wisdom to consider and to go through and to talk about. Because the commands are clear. We are to come together. We are to, here in Hebrews 10, we're to hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering, for who he's promised is faithful. And we are to let us consider how to stir one another up in love and good works, not neglecting meeting together as the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. So, we have commands. This is one, probably the famous one, of meeting together, stirring one another up in love and good works. And you can't do that by yourself.
Right.
So when you consider how far, the biggest question is, can I obey the commands of God when it talks about how I am to act with my fellow believers in church, meeting together, coming together? Can I faithfully act out those commands at the church I'm going to? Or is the distance going to be the hindrance in which I will not be able to be as faithful with it? Now, obviously, you can live close and not be faithful.
Right.
And this is not what we're talking about, but this is the question. Because true Christians, I think those who want to obey, desire, and hopefully will do what they can to be at church when they can, not legalistically, because that's worthless, but knowing not only the benefits one will receive and the means of grace and the fellowship and the being stirred up, but one can also do those same stirring up and to do it. And that's the principle. And how that works out and all of these other questions will allow you to see clearly, maybe not clearly, but hopefully will help you to guide you in a decision which would be best for your situation.
Yeah. Yeah, so I hope this is helpful to whoever may be tuning into it and or listen to it at a later date. Just some things to consider. You know, as Mike said, you know, we're not giving you, it's not cut and dry here where we're saying that you have to go to a church closer or you have to choose one that's further away because of the doctrine or whatnot. But these are all variables. These are all things that you have to take into consideration when you're looking for a church, period, whether it's closer or not so far or not so close. And so it's important that we understand that we here at G220, you know, we understand the importance of the local church. We understand being part of a local church. It doesn't always work out the way you think sometimes, but we understand that you need to be a part of a local church. And I think something else that comes up is what do you do if maybe, for instance, in talking about moving, if there is no good local churches in your area? And as we talked a little bit about moving earlier, and what if you're unable to move? What are some things that you can probably do or possibly do to try to get a church planted in your area? Maybe you're not qualified to be a pastor. Maybe you don't have that calling on your life, but how can you maybe go about getting a church in your area that would fit theologically sound teaching and have the marks of a true church? And one of the things that comes to mind with me, and Mike, you can, if you have any, you know, you could throw yours out there as well. But one of the things that comes to mind to me is trying to reach out to some good, solid, biblical, local churches and explain, you know, your situation. I think like even, I think I heard once before that MacArthur with the Master Seminary, they did something along those lines where, you know, people would request, like say, hey, there's no church here like this. There's no solid church here. And they would look to seeing if they could get people sent there to maybe plant a church and being a faithful part of that church plant to kind of help it grow and see what, you know, the Lord may do with it in that area to, you know, get it to going and thrive and whatnot. So maybe reaching out to solid brothers and sisters that you know that may be pastors or elders at another church and saying, hey, can you help me think this through and figure this out? I know you're in your area, but we would love to see a church planted here. Do you know anybody you can connect me to try to make that happen, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, you do have church plants that meet in houses and grow. And so that's always an option to establish, or even reaching out, seeing if other people in that church are in the similar area where this church plant would be able to better help them, that would be closer. And mm-hmm. with that is also an idea too. And I'm just, maybe my ecclesiology, it's hard to be close to people in really big churches.
Yeah.
Lots of people. Yeah. So just in general, a fan of smaller churches and that, you know, so there is those with that too. But yeah, there are, you know, ways, and sometimes you just might have to be patient
mm-hmm.
and, you know, lovingly and humbly sit in a church that you know you're not going to agree with theologically and maybe not even have the opportunity to teach at because of what you believe. But if they preach the gospel of faith and repentance. They're not heretical. You can still love them. You can still be a member with it. Mm-hmm. Will you probably have to supplement? Will it be harder? Well, yes. But you can, and you can sit there and you can be faithful to the church. And like, as mentioned earlier, not there to try to change the tide and make it a church that falls in line with your theological beliefs, but just to sit there because, okay, they're not Calvinists or Arminian. You're not a big revival guy and they're doing the tent revival things. You can still be part of the church.
Yeah.
And even talking to the pastors and say, look, maybe there's some things that you're just saying, I can't do this for theological convictions, and that's okay. You may be a family that thinks you should have everyone in the church service and that Sunday school, you shouldn't have a Sunday school hour where kids are split up and you have the adult Sunday school and the pre-K Sunday school and that. Well, you know, you can be willing to do it or even swap it. You go to a church. I can't even think the name now. Family Integrated Church. And, you know, your kids aren't disciplined enough to sit through, you know, a church service like that. Again, there's a call to try your best and to love them. And it goes the other way, too, no doubt. But that there may be times you just have to go to a church that you don't line up or it's going to be more difficult. But it's the church there. I do draw a line with heresy. You're not called to go to a heretical church and sit under the teaching because you're just going to get heretical teaching. And that's not going to be profitable for your soul.
No.
But do, you know, be resigned to the fact that you may have to go to a church that may not be the best for what you believe, but God can even use that to grow you to be a better, more holy person than you were.
Yeah, I think the thing that comes to mind would be, you know, God would grow you in your humility there, because that would really, you know, you take a strong Calvinist and put him in an Arminian church or a strong covenant, you know, somebody that's covenantal, they are reformed, and you put them in a dispensational church, they're going to hear things that they're going to be like, oh my goodness, what are we talking about here? You know, that is just not biblical. But at the same time saying, but I know they're preaching the gospel. I know they're Christians here, and they're going to, you're going to be able to grow in your humility of loving these brothers and sisters. That's why I said in the beginning of the show, when I was back at that little church that I grew up in, and then I truly got saved and went back to, it was such a simple time because it was a time of just loving the brethren. I was one of the youngest people there. It was just a congregation of old people, you know, and there was a few other, you know, older than me, but you know, that was still closer in age, but it was just a time of just loving these people. And theology is important, not saying it wasn't, but as I was growing, I didn't know some of the things that I know now. So there was no there was no division there with that, you know. It was just a simpler time of just loving on these people. And I think that if you're in a situation like that, you still need the body of Christ. And so, like, as you said, now we mentioned about home churches, and I think that, you know, mentioning the fact that maybe reaching out and trying to find some people to maybe help you plant a church or get a church planted in your area. What I want to make sure we caution of, I'm not just saying anybody just go plant your own churches wherever you want, because again, we don't believe that that would be biblical either. There may come times, there may come situations where that may have to happen if there is no sound theological teaching and it's all a bunch of heretical churches all over the place. Somebody may have to step up and plant a church there, even if they're not getting any outside help from any solid churches. That may be the case. And so I don't want to, you know, just broad brush it like that. But being someone that holds to the understanding of how churches should be planted by churches, planting up and sending forth people to go and build a church in this area and see it grow theologically, that and numerically as well, we do believe that that should be the way to do it, not just pop them up on your own.
Yeah. And that's important.
Yeah.
I think that's like the last. I think it's something that is rare,
mm-hmm.
to say the least. Now, obviously, this discussion really is tailored to the American and the West.
Right.
Obviously, in other places, especially persecuted places, this may not be the case.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so even in that, where you have people in Africa where the nearest church is 3 hours, 4 hours away, and they do their diligence, you know, and walking and being part of that. And we should commend them for their dedication. And part of it too is, do we have the dedication to make church not just a social aspect of our life, but intentional with it?
Mm-hmm.
So even in our discussion, we should realize how God has blessed us in this ways, and not to take for granted our blessings, where there's people in Africa just to get to a church, walk for hours,
mm-hmm.
to do it. And you know, so obviously, to really, this is definitely more of a Western world issues that we need to think through.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess that's been G220 Radio for tonight. Again, trying to think through this topic, just kind of came about from a question on Facebook. And so if you have any questions, comments, any ideas that you would want to add to this discussion, please email us at g220radio@gmail.com. And we would love to hear from you. Until next time, that's been G220 Radio. God bless and good night.